The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live.
It's good Monday. Thanks for being with us. We have coming up today, John Wilner, Wilner Hotline, the Pac-12 television deal, media deal. In my space, a lot of you are commenting on this and wanting to get involved in the conversation, what is best moving forward. Also, the dramatic victory by Arizona State at Arizona. What does it mean for Bobby Hurley and his contract? And also, what does it mean for Tommy Lloyd in the U of A this season? So John will get into it. None better nationally on the college football front than John Wilner, the Wilner Hotline. We're going to have a new voice on today's show, a new face, new voice. Greg Rosenberg with Arizona Prep Hoops in Arizona Varsity. He is as dialed in as anybody on social when it comes to the Arizona high school basketball scene. The state finals are this Saturday. And as we do on sports360az.com, we're pro, we're college, we're high school. There's a player this year in our state that is viewed as the number one, number two high school player in the NBA draft who will be playing at Veterans Memorial Coliseum this Saturday. If you're a hoopaholic like me, you'll want to know about that player. And also on the girls' side, a player that is as good as any girl I've ever seen come through Arizona. And she's only 14, and she's only a freshman, and she's playing in the state finals. So we're going to get into that with Greg Rosenberg. That is coming up on today's show. Opening comments brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, start banking better, getting more with free checking from Desert Financial. Join a winning team at desertfinancial.com. Desert Financial Credit Union, a big part of us. For 12 years now, we have been doing this, and we appreciate their support. Jared Nielsen is our chairman of the board. Anything goes wrong with today's show, it's his fault. He's the Iron Man. Don't screw up. He is there day in and day out. All right, some housekeeping. You're going to see a little bit more of this show this week. You won't see it on Tuesday because I'm traveling. I am going to Charlotte. I don't know if Kevin Durant is going to play, but Wednesday morning I will be with you in Charlotte with the Suns. Thursday I will be on tape before I head out to Chicago. Friday I'll join you from Chicago. You know, Durant's story is the story. It's not the combine, by the way. Just so we're being very clear about this. The NFL combine, there's some stuff I'll get to on it. Here in town, it's Kevin freaking Durant. That's it. And so we're going to take the show on the road and do our thing and have some fun and be at the games. If he plays Wednesday night, great. I don't know for a fact he's going to. There's some other things around the Suns that I want to get involved in, but I have a feeling it's going to happen. And that is why we're going to take the show on the road, as we are apt to do from time to time. I watched the Suns game yesterday. The story of the weekend was Arizona State and the dramatic finish. It was. Let's just not kid each other. That happened, and for ASU to win in Tucson was unbelievable. Bigger story overall is the Suns. So I watched their game yesterday against Milwaukee. Durant didn't play. Giannis didn't play. You know, when I watch the Suns and I watch Brook Lopez outplay DeAndre Ayton, you know, if you're looking for a show that's going to sit there and say, yay, go Suns, everything's great, wrong place. Just bye-bye. There's times where you do that. But Brook Lopez outplayed him yesterday. Jrue Holiday was the best player on the court yesterday. There's no question about that. He's terrific. It was a great NBA game. I had this, you know, there's times where I'll say, take this and back away. Don't go to this. All right? This is a Lamborghini. Most of us don't know how to drive a Lamborghini, so we're going to put stuff up. We're going to crash into a wall. We're going to... So I'm watching yesterday, and it was a really well-played NBA game. It wasn't the slop and garbage that is October, November, part of December, NBA basketball, January, just going, oh my gosh, this is not good. No. I mean, what do you know? The All-Star game comes, and all of a sudden, the Lakers are down 27. LeBron goes crazy. Anthony Davis actually plays in a game, and it's tremendous. Suns Bucks back and forth, 17 or 14 lead changes. Durant's over on the bench. Giannis can't play. Jay Crowder's on the floor, burying a couple of threes late. Brooke Lopez is swatting DeAndre Ayton. I mean, there was a lot of drama yesterday. It felt good. Like, you can actually see the light at the end of the tunnel of the long, long NBA season. Damian Lillard had 71 last night. Who wouldn't want to get involved in this? So, you know, watching the Suns play yesterday and lose to the Bucks, it was a well-played game. They lost by three. They missed a whole bunch of free throws. I think it was 13 or 14 free throws they ended up missing. So, you lose by three when you're that bad from the line, you're going to lose. So we'll see what happens in Charlotte. Charlotte's not good. I'm probably going to be in an arena that's half empty. That's fine. Chicago on a Friday night, different story. I might go to Dallas. I haven't decided yet. They play Dallas next Sunday, bearing the Kyrie, Luka conversation with Durant. That's pretty interesting. I wrote about this in our 3.thought column over the weekend. The data you need to circle. If you are a fan of hoop, March 22nd, Kevin Durant and the Phoenix Suns play at LeBron and the Lakers. The last time that Kevin Durant and LeBron James played against one another was December 25th, 2019. December 25th, 2019. Last time we saw this much heralded matchup. I'm going to be there. Or one of us for the team. I haven't decided if I'm going to. I don't want to be a hog and say none of you are going. Like, Jordan Hamm is going to Las Vegas with ASU. If ASU and U of A. U of A is expected to play on Friday night in Vegas. We're always there. He's also going to go see GCU. It's his turn to go. He's never gone. I've gone. I've been a hog. I'm not going to hog up all these Suns games. We're going to travel with them in the postseason. That's just what you do. You don't need to go run around with worthless games in January, in December, in November, in October. It's filling time. I just hope load management doesn't get in the way on March 22nd. Because having LeBron against Durant, who wouldn't want to see that? I spent part of Saturday, this will lead over to Arizona State. I spent part of Saturday at the Diamondbacks. I wanted to go see, I'm fascinated by Corbin Carroll. Corbin Carroll is when we have young guns that show up in our community. DeAndre Ayton comes in, gets drafted, the community goes, it's all buzzing. Devin Booker, is not a top five pick, but Devin Booker, there was interest in him. New face, fresh face. We love fresh faces. And think of the fresh faces in any of the sports. Kyler Murray shows up. Everybody gets a buzz. Oh, this is exciting. Draft pick. Big name. Go back to Fitz. Through the years. Corbin Carroll's rated as the number one overall prospect in all of baseball. I went out to the Diamondbacks Thursday, shot some of our TV show out there, our baseball show. Walked around, watched him do his thing. The guy, he jogs faster than I'll ever move. He's fast, one of the fastest players in the game. So Saturday, the Diamondbacks had their first spring training game. Their main squad was playing up at Talking Stick. I decided to go to HoHoCam over in Mesa. I love that little stadium. They're playing the A's, very few A's fans. Corbin Carroll is out on the field with Alec Thomas, Jordan Lawler, players that are going to play at a high level. The Diamondbacks, for as many people want to be critical of them, you've not been paying attention. They've got some kids. They've got some ballers, players. So I watch Corbin Carroll go about his business. I'm out on the field, it's like 12:15. He runs by me. I say hello. He goes out, he does his stretch. He does his thing. Then he goes over right to the line. He starts signing autographs. And he's signing autographs for a good 15 minutes. And he's signing every last one of them. And I walk over to him. I said, I really admire how you handle this stuff with the fans. He said, yeah, it's kind of hard to tell the collectors sometimes. And I know what he means. It's the dude that gets his autograph and then runs out in the parking lot and sells it. It's fine if that's how you want to do your business. And we have this conversation. I look down at my watch. It's 12:55. I go upstairs, or 12:50. I go upstairs. Game starts at 1:05. First pitch, he dunks one over in the left field. 107, he steals second base. 109, he scores. Pretty good about 14 minutes. And I know it's spring training, but still very exciting. A lot of fun. 17 minutes, I should say. Just watching Corbin Carroll play for me is, okay, I will pay the price of admission to watch this guy. I will. Nothing worse than just a team rolling guys out on the field. Manny Machado gets his contract, $350 million from the Padres. I already have people saying, well, Ken Kendrick's not committed to winning. There's different ways you can go about winning. Are there times where the Diamondbacks have spent recklessly? Zach Greinke, Mad Bum, not bad guys, trying to go win, bring in the big number. Are there times they should have spent Paul Goldschmidt, J.D. Martinez? Yeah, they've messed up. But I think they have a core group of players that, most importantly, they can control. If they get anything out of their bullpen, they're going to be interesting. So, and I wanted to go see the pace of play for the game. You know, these clocks are now in, the pitch clock. It was fine. I didn't hear fans complaining about it. So I leave the stadium, and I've got a 3:30 meeting I had to get to. And I turn on the ASU game. And there's like 4 minutes to go, and ASU is down 10, and I'm thinking, okay, this is the Titanic. We know how the movie ends. The boat sinks. But they're hanging in there. They're hanging in there. They're hanging in there. And I pull in. I get a Dutch Bros, and I'm driving along, and I lean in because there's just a few seconds left, and the shot goes in, and Tim Healy goes crazy, and Kyle Dodd is hooting and hollering. Kyle, God bless Kyle. He says a little bit later, I hope I didn't curse on the air. It's very funny. That was the story of the weekend. That was the story of the weekend. And I've written and I've said Bobby Hurley deserves an extension. I've written and I've said repeatedly that the arena needs to be torn down and replaced. And the president doesn't do it. And I don't know why Arizona State is always something university on some of these subjects. I really don't. I don't know why that's like, this isn't that hard. Let's just say the shot doesn't go in. You're going to fire Bobby over that? He kept his team in it. Every time I came home and I taped it, he came home, watched the game back. Watch every timeout from the 4 minute mark on. Every timeout, they run a good set. They were well prepared. They were well coached. DJ Horn set the screen that freed up Cambridge. So they ran these sets in practice. You know, if you're a U of A fan, you've lost to some teams that aren't very good this year, just so we're really clear about that. I'm going to talk to John Wilner about it here in a couple minutes. So, you know, why Bobby doesn't have an extension this morning, why it's not in my inbox, why Arizona State has not extended Bob, I don't know. I wish I did know. Somebody over there called me Friday night and said, Bobby is Chris Collins. Chris Collins at Northwestern goes through peaks and valleys, but he's still there, and now they're winning big. Of other people had said, you know, Rick Pitino's winning at Iona. They should fire Bobby and they bring Rick Pitino in here. Okay, sounds just dandy and ducky to me. ASU basketball is what it is. It's been a middle of the road. There's no denying this. Anybody who denies this is simply on the payroll at ASU. That's it. They've been a middle of the road program playing in one of the worst facilities in America, and that's a fact. But I think they have the right coach. I've stuck behind Bobby Hurley. I've never said, fire him. This isn't Herm. This isn't like the football program's a complete train wreck, which it was for way too long. The arena's, in my opinion, the arena's 70% of the problem over there. You can't walk recruits in there because it's embarrassing. It's like, I'm going to invite people over to the house and our bathroom isn't clean and the paint's falling off the kitchen and the stove doesn't work, whatever it is. You walk in there, it's just not good. Imagine if he could stand there with some top recruits and say, you come here and we're opening this up and we're going to get you involved and you can be first part of this class. You're Cody Williams over at Perry. Why are you going to Colorado? Why is it he's going to be the number two overall pick in the draft according to mock drafts? And this kid's right here in our own backyard. I'm not going to get on Bobby about that. You know, Tad Boyle's able to get in, but ASU isn't? Come on. Is it the whole above Bobby thing? Yeah, in my view it is, in my view alone. The Combine is this week, and we used to go to the Combine. Those of you that watch this show through the years, you know that we used to take this show to the Combine. And then I started looking around saying, we get these guys for like 10 minutes, if we're lucky. And there are a lot of people here who have no business being here. And we can't really do much And I don't see the value in it. And now teams are not going. Green Bay is not going. Maybe they're going into the cave with Aaron Rodgers. I don't know. So it used to be an event that I would look at and say there's a lot of value. I don't see that anymore. It'd be just fine. Story about the Bears wanting to trade their top pick. Of course the Bears are going to be open trading their top pick. They have Justin Fields. Should they keep Justin Fields or should they not trade Justin Fields? Does this impact the Cardinals? Should the Cardinals try to trade up and get the number one overall pick? Well, they already have a quarterback, but could they get a defensive lineman? Can they get Carter? Oh my gosh, this would be great. Yeah, I could do that all day long. I don't have to be in Indianapolis doing that anymore. It's just access has become an issue. And I'm not going to subject you guys just to putting on a bunch of segment fillers talking about things that are not really that interesting to me, quite frankly. Amazon and Friday Night Football for the Pac-12 is interesting. John Wilner is going to join us next. John Wilner, of course, Wilner Hotline, not a better voice nationally than John Wilner on the college front. He's part of what we do every week. And we will have him and then Greg Rosenberg on a Monday. And I will be in Charlotte with the Suns on Wednesday. We're back with John Wilner next. All right, it is time to chop it up with John Wilner. There's a lot to get to today on this busy Monday. John Wilner, of course, you can follow him in Wilner Hotline. He has his Wilner Canzano podcast. Don't let the title fool you. It's the Wilner Canzano podcast you can find on any of your podcast outlets. It is good to see you. Is Arizona State in the tournament today after what happened in Tucson?
Boy, that was something. I don't think they're in yet. I think they still got some work to do. They had fallen a little bit too far off the bubble, in my opinion, for one win, as impressive as it was, for one win to get them in. I still think they need, you know, a split in LA would be big. They can't lose a bad game in the Pac-12 tournament, and there's plenty of potholes in Las Vegas. So we'll see. And the other piece is, it's never about, is ASU in? What do they need to do to get in? It's also about everybody else, because they're going to be compared to teams from other conferences. The way the committee does it is they basically vote on groups of 4, 6, 8 teams at a time. So you're constantly being compared to someone else. Well, if ASU does okay and holds its ground, but say two other teams that are on their level have big wins and improve their position, then ASU could get knocked out by nothing that they did. Just, it's all relative.
Yeah, I mean, it could be U of A goes and gets swept in LA. That impacts Arizona State, to your point.
Sure, absolutely. Yep. Everything, it's all fluid and everything impacts everything else.
Yeah. So the good victories that they've had versus the bad victories, I mean, I haven't looked at USF lately, but ASU went to San Francisco in December, it was their worst showing of the year. And that's going to sit there and be, well,
yes,
you know, they
that's
lost
a bad one.
Yeah. At the start of the season, I think it was Texas Southern or somebody, yeah, some sectional school that was like, what are you doing?
Right. Right. And part of ASU's problem is they had the committee looks at what percentage of your wins are the so-called quadrant four, which kind of equates to a cupcake win. ASU's got a fairly high percentage of the total wins are quadrant four victories, and they've got a couple of bad losses. So it's going to be, we'll have to see what happens. I think they got a chance. They gave themselves a chance with what happened on Saturday.
John Wilner with us for a couple of minutes. Okay, Bobby Hurley, and I wrote about this in my notes column down here. Bobby's got a year left on his deal, and they haven't extended him, and I look at it and say he's in one of the most difficult jobs within the conference. Bad arena, wiped out by COVID, came back this year. I call them the one and dones because it's five starters who are not going to be here next year. They've won 20. They were down 10 in Tucson, John, and you were in Tucson for years. You know this. Down 10 in Tucson usually means down 20 when the horn goes off.
Yep.
The boat sinks at the end of the Titanic. We know how this movie
is. Yes.
Right. And for Bobby to keep his team, not just in that game, but I think in general this year, I don't for the life of me understand. It's kind of like Chris Collins at Northwestern, does a good job, goes through some valleys, but they stick with him. Do you see Bobby's situation as, you know what, Brad, they get swept and they go to the Vegas, he should be gone, or he's done enough here given everything on space? And I know he likes it here in Phoenix. So Bobby Hurley, from your view.
Yeah, well, we'll see. I think the next 2 weeks could have a big impact. But I kind of agree. Who are they going to get that's better? That's the thing. Okay, if you don't want Hurley, you got to have a replacement in mind who's going to win more often than he is, given the parameters of the job, right? Given the arena, given the market, given the local talent, all those things. Can they find somebody who's going to win more? I do think COVID certainly derailed the momentum they had. I think he made a couple of bad decisions when it came to retaining players and transfers, creating some real bad chemistry for a year or two. But it seems like he's got things sorted out. You know, since February of last year, they finished real strong. So if you look at February of last year and then what they've done this season, you could make the case they're on the right path. But again, given the resources and what ASU pays, are they going to get somebody in there they think is absolutely a better coach?
Yeah, the name that fans throw at me is Rick Pitino at Iona. So, no, that's a nice, sexy name. That's a nice, sexy name that is sitting out there, and he's done a great job. But that's dreaming, and I don't know if that's a dream you want to be involved with. It could be a nightmare. So you're sitting here with Bobby, who wants to be here. And to your point, when Josh Christopher and Marcus Bagley came here, those were mistakes by Bobby, in my opinion. Try to go the one and done route. Try to go, let's go get the hot guy for. And it was very evident very early on, especially with Christopher. I don't want to be here. I just want to get to the NBA. And yeah, that can be part of putting it together. But if you're going to have sustainability in Tempe, go at it from that way. Let me switch gears though to Tucson. What do you make out of what's going on in Tucson? It wasn't just the game that they lost. There is a narrative out there, John, that Sean Miller left the cupboard very full, and Tommy Lloyd is winning with Sean Miller's players. And Sean has a top 15 team right now at Xavier, last time I checked. Really hoping Xavier plays U of A in the tournament. That would just be the best.
That would be great.
What's your view of Tommy Lloyd and what's going on with the Wildcats?
Yeah, well, Sean Miller gets players. There's no doubt about that. Wherever he has been, he's had players. We'll see. This next year is going to be very telling because, you know, without Tubelis, I'm assuming he's going to leave. And we'll see how Lloyd does with a roster that's basically the core is his own guys. He certainly did a great job getting players at Gonzaga. You could make the case that Gonzaga is having more trouble replacing Lloyd in terms of its personnel acquisition than Lloyd is having it all at Arizona replacing Sean Miller, right? There's a lot of people that think Mark Few, his talent is going to really deteriorate next year because of Neb Lloyd. So we'll see. But clearly, you know, there's something that's not quite right with them. You know, they've got five losses to teams that probably aren't going to be in the NCAA tournament, right? So and they've lost at home, you know, referenced about losing the 10-point lead against ASU. We'll see how they do in the NCAAs. But, I certainly don't think anybody in their right mind is thinking Tommy Lloyd's not up for the job at Arizona.
Right.
We'll see, you know, over the long haul what kind of players he gets in there and what their ceiling is.
Yeah. I mean, and to your point on Mark Few, I saw where Gonzaga is the number two seed in the WCC tournament.
Yeah.
Vegas, which, you know, St. Mary's is the number one. And so it's not like they're just blowing through everybody like they once did.
Right. Well, once Julian Strother leave and Drew Timmy, who were part of the Lloyd recruiting era, I don't know. There's some real question about Gonzaga long haul without Lloyd on that staff.
Mm. John Wilner with us for a couple of minutes. Let's turn our attention to the weekly conversation. More trees have been cut down about what's going to happen with the Pac-12 media rights than, you know, the petrified forest or whatever analogy you want to use. As we sit here today, do you believe this is the week? Do you believe this is, as we turn the calendar to March, that in the next week or two, because there's all these stories coming out now, John. It's this network. It's that network. Amazon actually has interest in a Friday night game. And Ion Network and so on and so on and so on. Where are you at today on all this?
There was a report last week that the Ion Network, owned by Scripps, could end up being a bidder. And my view of that is if Commissioner George Kliakoff took a deal with Ion to Oregon and Washington, they would laugh him to the unemployment line. right? That kind of thing's not happening. So I would suspect, I think there's a real good chance that by March 13th, 15th, you know, within 2 weeks, basically, they either have a deal in place or they have the framework of a deal in place, and the presidents are kind of going through it and, you know, trying to figure out if they want to make any changes. But the structure is done and we have some clarity within about 2 weeks.
Hmm. From your view, will it be met with open arms and this is the greatest deal for the conference, or this is it?
I think it's going to be, no, it's not going to be the first. It's not going to be the former. It's going to be kind of a, I think it's going to be a little bit of a grin and bear it deal, especially because, you know, they had pretty high expectations in the fall, maybe a little bit unreasonably high. Mm-hmm. And then once the Big 12 got cut its deal, that affected the marketplace for the Pac-12. So I think, as I've thought all along, the Big 12 and the Pac-12 are very similar in value. The Big 12's deal is for basically, you know, $31, $32 million a year. Pac-12 is going to be somewhere in there. It could be a little bit below, could be a little bit higher, but it's going to be in that range. And they're going to be like the Big 12 and the ACC looking up at the SEC and Big 10.
Okay, all the rumor and stuff that's written in 99% on Twitter that's not true. Any truth that there are schools that will say we're out of here on this deal?
I do not expect that, but it is not, as I've said from the get-go, until you have signed, until your presidents have signed a deal, you never know what's going to happen. And that is still the case with the Pac-12, in my opinion. The most likely outcome is that they're going to all stick together. But until they've signed, I am not ruling out the possibility that somebody or multiple schools could end up leaving and be replaced, or the whole thing could blow up. You never know with realignment.
Okay, Pac-12 Network was led by Michael Crow, Dr. Crow, here at ASU. And so who is the driving force for the presidents on this deal? Is there one person in place, one president who's wielding the power, leading the charge, or head of a committee that I don't know about?
Well, so the presidents have what's called the executive committee. It goes on a 2-year rotation, and it's based on seniority. Right now, the three presidents on that executive committee, and it basically sets the agenda. It is very influential. The executive committee will basically take a deal, the best deal that the commissioner is going to give them options. I think they're going to pick the best deal. They're going to take that deal to the broader group for approval. Those three are Anna Marie Cause from Washington. She is the chair of the executive committee. Kirk Schultz from Washington State, and Mark Tessier-Levine from Stanford, right? And it's three presidents in, you know, the old North Division. That's just the way it worked out, right? None of the four corner presidents are involved. Schultz is very sharp when it comes to college football matters. He's on the playoff board of managers. He's been in the Big 12. My guess is he's going to be providing a lot of strategic insight. But Cause is really the one who's driving this bus here because she's the chair.
From my understanding, just again talking with media consultants, ESPN's not out of it yet. They like that Saturday night slot, and that's about the only thing that could end up over on ESPN's plate with the cuts coming to Disney and their stock price taking a hit and all that stuff. Have you heard the same thing?
Oh, I'd be very surprised if ESPN's not part of it. Any reports or rumors suggesting ESPN is out are inaccurate. Very, very surprised if ESPN's not part of the Pac-12 deal, and maybe more than just the 7:30 windows, right? I mean, if you got Oregon against Washington, both top 10, ESPN's going to want that game. I think they're going to figure out a way to have a package of games that gives them access to a few prime games to go, you know, 5 o'clock, and then that 7:30 window. ESPN will probably have, my guess, 20 to 22 games every season.
More attractive, Amazon on a Friday night so you could promote it during the Thursday night NFL games, or Apple TV?
Well, I mean, I don't know that that's necessarily the choice. Amazon may want more than just one game a week for Friday night. Now, I do think that Friday night thing has made tons of sense for them from the get-go because of the NFL situation. I don't know that that Apple is got specific parameters as to when they'd want to show games. And I don't know. We don't know that those two are going to be part of it. I mean, they're part of the negotiations. We don't know how this thing's going to break. They could put all of their content on the Disney networks, for all I know, so that it would you would get a bunch of stuff on Hulu, ESPN Plus, ESPN. Maybe Apple and Amazon don't end up being involved at all. Mm. Nothing is off the table. That's my one suggestion to listeners is discount nothing.
Okay. And I'm getting asked all these questions here. Like, come on, Brad, you're beating
sure.
ground. But no, this is what people are talking about.
Nobody knows. There's a very, very small circle of people who actually know what's going on. And most of the people who are talking to the media aren't privy to that information. But the best bet overall is there'll be a combination of games on ESPN and ABC and then games that are going to be streamed. Streaming will be part of it. I just don't know. That could be ESPN Plus. It could be Amazon. It could be Apple.
We won't see the Pac-12, and I've been asked this one a bunch. We will not see the Pac-12 playing on Tuesday and Wednesday nights because they're so desperate for windows, right?
I would be very surprised about that. Although I've always thought that the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, 5 o'clock game, you'd get a good audience for that because everybody's checked out of work, and that's everybody wants football. The problem with playing on that Wednesday is what it does to the team's schedules the week and 2 weeks before. But that, to me, that's always been a great window, but I cannot see the Pac-12 taking the MAC view and playing on Tuesdays and Wednesdays regularly.
Okay, the RSN situation at Bally Networks. They hired a CFO this past week. They've hired some people in place in the last 48 hours that make it sound like, yeah, we're not pulling the plug on this thing. It's not going to go away. And then they're going to try to figure it out. The Pac-12 is sitting over there, and you have some bigger fish that are in the media space. We just saw AT&T say, we're out. We're going to pull the plug on the National Geographic Channel and all of that. John, I think if the Pac-12 were just to take a step back with all the upheaval just in the last few weeks, there may be some better options that come along rather than we got to get a deal done by March 15th, or it's, come on, Brad, they're just going to keep whittling it away.
Well, the question is, and you can argue that Pac-12 content will be more valuable in a year than it is now, and in 2 years, because the price, the cost, the value of live sports is basically increasing. You have little bit of bumps here and there because of the economy, but generally speaking, live sports rights are soaring. But I think they got to get a deal done now. There's too much uncertainty in college football. There are, you know, if you the longer you wait, the more likely, the higher your risk, the more likely the unknowns come in and kind of kneecap you. I think that they have waited too long. They got to get it done here to settle down some very anxious campus officials.
Good stuff. I'll let you go off that. Appreciate your time. I'm sure there's much more to come on this. Thanks, John.
Thank you, Brad.
There's John Wilner. You can find his content, Wilner Hotline, on Twitter. And, of course, the Wilner Canzano podcast. And John, of course, his content we carry on sports360az.com and on our television site as well. We're back with more after this timeout. All right, as promised, a new face, a new voice, someone that I've admired from afar for a long, long time. When I see high school and college basketball players in the state of Arizona, Greg Rosenberg's name is usually attached to it in some way, shape, or form. He's a must-follow on social media. He is with PrepHoops.com Arizona, Arizona Varsity. He does scouting. He has a scouting service. In short, he has no life. He goes into gyms and he just hangs out. Right? Is that, Greg, is that the best way to introduce you on this?
I do have a nice family, too.
And he has a great family that's very understanding. Very understanding family, I would think.
Yes, they understand what I do.
That's great. What is it you do? What if you're talking to a fan who's like, okay, Brad, you gave him this nice little setup, but what do you do exactly?
Oh, man. Well, I'm kind of a little different than most. I actually start at the freshman game. And then I'll watch the junior varsity and, of course, stay for the varsity game and just seeing a kid's potential. Mm-hmm. And in the end, I'll you know, put rankings together. I'll make a little profile for specific players who are, in my opinion, college worthy. And then I'll send it out, email it out to all my college coaches in my scouting service. But I'm also doing articles at Prep Hoops Arizona and talking about stuff, basketball stuff in Arizona varsity, all the forums, which I'm sure you know about.
Oh, yeah.
Yourself. Yeah.
That's why I admire you from afar. Now it's great to have you on board with us for a couple of minutes. Greg Rosenberg, give him a follow on his social. We'll get into that later. Okay, so I want to go back to Cody Williams. Let's just start there and take me through, like, when you saw him for the first time, because he will be on display this coming Saturday night. And there are fans in the Valley, hoopaholics, I call them, that have no idea that there's this player at the high school level because they're paying attention to the NBA and they're paying attention to college. They don't know there's this kid at Perry High School that could well be the number one overall pick or two, three, five, I don't know, in 2024 somewhere. So take me back the first time you watched him play, and did you see this?
You know, you notice how long he was, and his brother was very good. He wasn't a pro prospect yet, his brother.
Jalen, brother was Oklahoma City.
Yeah, Jalen, who's now a rookie at Oklahoma City Thunder. Jalen only left senior year at 6'2", and he grew to almost 6'6", which he is now. Cody was a little different. He started already about 6'3", and you're like, wow, he could actually handle it. He was so long. He was natural instincts on defense, and he just went 6'3", to 6'4", to 6'5". You know, just kept him. He's near 6'8", now. He's handling it like, you know, some throw-around Penny Hardaway, and I think he's more of a point forward. But he guards 1, 2, 3, which is really important. But he handles it. He makes the passes. He shoots the three well. He's not as skilled as Jalen was. He's not the passer as Jalen was. But he's way bigger and way more athletic. So that's that's something, obviously, college, you know, coaches, of course, but the NBA people, they love his length, over 7 foot wingspan. His passing, his shooting, but the athleticism. I mean, it's, you know, it's, if Jalen didn't exist, his brother, would people be saying, okay, he'll be a lottery because they don't want to miss now on Cody? You know, and even Cody will tell you it's a long way to go. You know, he's obviously skinny, you know, but he's under 200 pounds. Obviously, the NBA guys are all strong, 220 plus, whatever they are, 210 for guards. But he has all the intangibles you want. He has the measurables. He has the athleticism. He has the lineage now. So it's like he does project well to get up to that point. But he has to put in the work, of course. They're not just going to give it to him.
When did you first see him? Do you remember? How old?
I think it was ninth grade. Man, it might have been during COVID time, you know, some random tournaments. And it was supposedly, you know, the best young kids. And he was right there with all of them. And he was a little longer than all of them. You know, he just was very weak, though. Very weak. And you didn't know when he was going to fill in, how tall he would get. Because, once again, at the time, Jalen wasn't that big yet. And then he pushed up very quickly. And then over the years, you're like, wow. And this kid might be, you know, one of those who could be McDonald's All-American type. And sure enough, then he played Firestorm, club team. They were one of the best 16U teams in the West Coast. And then he switched over to the EYBL, which is, you know, they go against kids like LeBron's son and right. Some of the best players in the world for club basketball. And he went with Vegas Elite. And he did well again. And everyone, you know, in the East Coast, Midwest, whatever, were like, wow, who's this kid from Arizona? You know, and the ball started getting rolling and rolling, went to Pangos All-American camp. I mean, he's basically checked every mark that he needed to, and he's done well.
When you look at a player, do you go off of club or do you go off of high school? What do you go off of?
Oof. It depends what high school. Because obviously Perry gets a lot of national recognition, but they have not left the state. Mm-hmm. So at Section 7, you saw them go against some of the best West Coast teams. Around. But club, you see some of the best kids in the country from different regions. So it's a little, maybe a little more realistic to who he'll be going against in college. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? He's not just going to go against Basha High School and Sunny Slope, you know, Saturday. It's going to be kids from Florida and Texas and Chicago and you name it. I mean, he's going to have to go against all of them and, you know, to try to be one of the lottery picks. Who knows? I mean, he could be a 2-year guy. You know what I mean? I don't want to just say he's one and done no matter what. And I think each kid has his own, you know, mindset of what he or she want to do, you know, once they get into college basketball.
When you see him and Koa, Pete, there's people that have said to me, there's no way Sammy is going to be able to keep Koa through high school, that eventually the prep schools will take over. And I'm like, I've known that family a long time. I think he's going to stay in high school, but that's just me. You're closer to the situation. Are you surprised, one, that Cody has stayed and not gone the prep school route, and two, Koa, Pete, and address that?
Cody, they're very loyal people, military background, the father, and he, I mean, you know, his brother did it and he's in the NBA, one of the best rookies this draft class. I mean, why not go that route? And you have Koa to play net with you. They're just very loyal people. Koa's brother last week, Lily said, we'll be back, you know, at least for junior year, senior year, you know, it, every year you kind of look at it. What do we have coming back? Do we have a chance to compete? Could we be a national team? Who will we play? Stuff like that. Section 7 has opened up a lot of eyes for high school. Kind of gave some power back to the high school coaches that it's not only club. Now they're getting, you know, seen. Some of the, at least the big teams are getting seen by the West Coast scouts and all over.
Let me jump in on that because fans may not know. Section 7 is in June. This is not in... I think it's a very important point that you bring up. Fans may just think, well, they're only playing high school November, December, January, and February, and then they go play in their club team. No, Section 7 is a game changer now. Yes. And it's about time that something did come along to say, you don't have to go chase it just at these places. And I'm not besmirching them, Greg, but I just feel like the high schools had an arm tied behind their back until 7 came along.
Yeah, I agree with that. Section 7, I mean, June ball has always been there. It's what the time before and after, basically the club kind of goes right in the middle, and, you know, then July goes back to the club, and, you know, basically April and May is all club. And then June, you know, they play, you know, 20 games or whatever they play and they go back to club. But now June is a little more important. There's actual live period for college coaches. Mm-hmm. So now Arizona Cardinal Stadium is hosting, get the correct dates here. So June 23-25 is the actual live period for at least for Arizona. So it'll be about 144 teams, 50 Arizona. That's another story because it's only 50 Arizona. When in the past it was a little more, but they're going to kind of play in some of the teams to try to get to that 50. But that's another discussion. But and then, you know, it's like 35, 50, 40 California teams. And then Cali has their own the week before. They'll have their Section 7, just California teams. And I'm sure that all the best will come over the next week to try to compete, you know, for the 144. And I know the girls are the week before in Arizona, also at Arizona Cardinal Stadium. The setup is spectacular. I mean, it's unbelievable. Like literally inside they make, I think it was like 12 courts inside the Cardinal Stadium. Amazing setting.
Greg Rosenberg with us. You can follow him on social. The best social to follow you is?
Twitter. at Greg Rosenberg 1.
And prephoops.com. He's also on Arizona Varsity. He does quite a bit on the high school. I respect his work a great deal. That's why I want him on for a few minutes just to kind of talk a little bit about this coming week and weekend. You know, the finals are set over on the boys' side, the matchup. And is there any reason to believe that Sunny Slope, this isn't besmirching Sunny Slope, but I saw Perry get challenged by Ironwood at Visit Mesa. I saw that in person. That was a game. I was not up at Pinnacle, and Pinnacle beat them. And then we saw what Perry did to Pinnacle a couple weeks ago. Just like, don't wake up the bear. Any reason to believe Sunny Slope's going to push them in the finals?
It's funny. I was talking to one of my buddies who, you know, watches a lot of basketball like myself. And I kind of wrote it down and I'm like, there's four things you have to have all four. If you don't, you have no chance. Number one, coaching. Sammy Duane, National Coach of the Year 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. Check. Number two, size. You have 6'7", 6'6", on the front line starting. So you could check that. Number three, athleticism. They have a bunch of kids who are very athletic, very long. And, you know, I mean, are they as long as athletic as Cody and Koa? No, but enough to hang. Number four, have to have this, shooting. They have a bunch of shooters. They have a starting point guard, John Manigley, freshman, mm-hmm. could really shoot it. But a lot of the role players are shooters. And they're like designed there, you know, drive, kick it, boom, shoot it. So there's enough, you know, ingredients to get close. You know, I don't know if anyone's actually going to pick Sunny Slope, but I personally, before the whole bracket came out, I picked Sunny Slope versus Barry. Hmm. So I kind of foresaw, I saw Sunny Slope play Liberty. It was another really, they only lost a Perry by maybe it was like 10. So, you know, and then Sunny Slope beat Liberty and Sunny Slope just beat Basha in fine fashion the other day in the Final Four. So they're moving up and they have a lot of freshmen. So whenever you have freshmen.
Let me ask you this. The fan that is watching this is not the person who's in a gym every night like you. Okay. Not many people can be at a lot of places. So if you're talking to them and this week we have some semis still that are needing to be played, and then the finals. If there's a couple players, I'm not going to just say teams, or maybe you just want to do teams and not single people out. Could be on the boys' side, could be on the girls' side. I've seen Jersey Robinson in person. You have to go see her. You just have to go see her. That's just a fact at Desert Vista. But are there some players you could tick off before we wrap things up look, this week you need to go to this game?
Jersey is probably the number one. I mean, anyone who's interested, I mean, it's, you know, she's only a freshman, but she's 14. I don't want to throw around like Diana Taurasi, but she kind of reminds me of Diana Taurasi. She's near 6'1". She's strong. She has the skill. I saw her. She was 10 for 10 from the line at like 31. Everything's like effortless for her. I mean, like, she's not dunking, you know, but she basically does everything else you need to do on a court, guarding literally 1 through 5. You know, you could only do that basically in high school. College obviously will be different, but the ball's in her hand, you know, and there's some other outstanding girls on the Desert Vista team, and they're heavy favorites. They're kind of like Perry for the girl side. Perry and Desert Vista, if they don't win, everyone would be like, wow, you know, so.
Let me jump in on Jersey Robinson just for a minute. If we're talking about great Arizona high school players, I saw her in the MLK game. I was sitting with Mark Beasley, you know Mark well. Yep. He's and I are watching her against Xavier, and she's between the legs and the opening tip, behind her back, fall away through, running the other way before it even goes through the net, picks up full court, does everything, enjoys the game, has fun at 14 years of age, Greg. Like, I've never seen a player. I saw Nicole Powell back in the day. I've not seen somebody that just completely dominated from Sydney Weiss would walk out on the court up at Pinnacle and kick tails. But nothing like this. Nothing like this from Jersey. Am I overstating it? Have you seen someone comment?
No. It's funny because I have a buddy who is a big club coach for the boys. And I'm like, oh, why are you here? He's like, oh, I had a girl who played for me with the boys in sixth grade. I'm like, let me guess, it's Jersey Robinson. He's like, yep. So she's been always playing with the boys. No drop off. I mean, you could put her in a club, you know, 15U, 14U, whatever, you know, age she's in play, and it wouldn't be a drop off. Like, she's that good. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously you have to keep on getting better, and, you know, and girls will catch up to her, but I mean, she's 14. She's already playing, you know, technically up. She could be in eighth grade right now and scoring 70 a game, you know, in these middle school gyms or whatever, junior high, you know, like, I mean, the sky's definitely the limit. And, you know, you see kids like Marvin Bagley over the years. And, you know, there's others like Jalen Williams, Ty Washington. They start up, you knew they were good. You should know how good would they be. And then, you know, junior, senior, you're like, oh, okay, they could be a pro. you know, and, you know, at least for Ty. Jalen, you still didn't know when he left for Santa Clara. You knew he was really good, but he went to Santa Clara. Usually those type of kids, they go to straight to Kentucky and Kansas and Arizona, you know, like UCLA. So it's, you still didn't know, like Jersey and Marvin Bagley, you kind of think they're going to be pros. You know, there's very few of those, you know, so Jersey might be one of them. It's you hate to put that on someone, you know, like, because the pressure is immense. I can only imagine, you know.
But a great kid, it seems like. I visited with her for a bit after the game was over. The dad was around. But, you know, I'll go back to Jared Bayless as a dopey little sophomore with his jersey barely hanging out at St. Mary's. And I saw him hit a fall away three to beat Brophy, and that was the coming out for him. And it felt like, okay, that guy's going to go to the NBA. That guy will be. Right. Mike Bibby, that guy will be in the NBA in some way, shape, or form. Yeah. We haven't had many that have rolled through here. When you think about the population growing, it feels like there are, I'm not going to say on the football level of things, but in basketball it does feel like we're starting to catch up in terms of players we are watching in high school that can go on and play in the NBA or play abroad. Jahi Carson, go play around the world and make money and bump around on a bus. It'll happen.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, Koa, you know, you could probably throw Koa in there too. I mean, at that size and the lineage of the family, you know, is unbelievable, obviously, as you mentioned. I mean, he's probably one that I would tab for the AIA, you know, other than Cody. And they're on the same team, you know, I mean, but right away, freshman year, you're like, oh, he's a little different with the body, the skill, the strength, the ball handling, the passing. I mean, it's, you just usually don't see usually kids that big or a little goofy and, you know, they're falling down almost and, you know, they're just tall, you know, like, and I, trust me, I watch it. I see freshmen who are that big and they barely could catch the ball, you know, but they're tall and, you know, they got upside potential, but Koa's, I mean, he has the ball in his hands a lot when he was young and he's making plays, you know, he's not just like a center, you know, he's more like a three. He'll play some four.
He looks like a 24-year-old when he runs out on the floor. That's not.
He's really mature.
He's really mature, and he handles his business. That family handles their business the right way. He handles his business the right way.
I think with having a professional in the family, it just and you know, and so many of the kids played football, you know, high level football, and it just you know, just it's his mental makeup is, and same with Cody. And you notice, you know, in some of the games you'll watch, and, you know, at least on Saturday for Cody, their faces don't change too much. You know, like, you never know. It's kind of like Tim Duncan over the years. You never know if they're up 50 or down 50. They're just very, very even keeled. And that's usually the sign of, you know, a guy who's thinking long-term professionally, you know.
It's good
stuff. It's fun to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really enjoyed chatting with you. I'd like to do it again sometime. Great stuff. Thanks for your time.
My pleasure.
It's Greg Rosenberg, prephoops.com, Arizona varsity. And he does so much more than that, but give him a follow over on Twitter. And we're back with more after this timeout.